ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः. दि मास्टर् विद् दि ब्रह्मो डिवोटीस् October 28, 1882. श्री रामकृष्ण वास् टाकिङ्ग् अबौट् दि एस्पेक्ट् आफ् गाड् विथ् फार्म् विथौट् फार्म्. One of the Brahmo devotees had put a question, does God have forms and can God be seen? Sri Ramakrishna's words are nothing but the very essence of all the Vedas, Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita. Many times I told you, the essence of all the Vedas is the Upanishads. And the essence of the Upanishads is Bhagavad Gita. And the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is this Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And the essence of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is the very first chapter wherein the subtlest spiritual points have been raised. One of the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna is, never put a limit to God. Why? Because God is limitless. Whatever we think, with sincerity, that is absolutely fine. But never say, God is only God of our religion, God of our country, everybody's God is worthless. Such people do not understand what they are talking about. Because even according to them, God is infinite. God is only one. If that is true, and if they understand it properly, then nobody has any choice but to worship God, the same God, because there is no second God. Only according to the language, and we use it every day of our life, same object is called by many, many different names. Each country, each region has its own names. The most important answer Sri Ramakrishna gives is, one must be first of all sincere. Sit down and look into the mirror of your own mind and question yourself, do I really want only God? The answer is, no, I want, really speaking, many things from God. God is only an instrument of my storehouse, of my fulfillment. That is the worst type of person who can say that honestly. The next person, yes, I believe in God and I also want God, but not now. Let me first enjoy the world. Only many Hindus cherish that idea that when we become old or retired from jobs, and in the past that was a reality. At some age people used to retire. But now that word retirement has become redundant because so many things are there to be done. And life has become intensely competitive. So the second class of people say, we want the world, we want God also. That is why tantras have developed. The speciality of tantras is yoga and bhoga. But these people, they forget one fundamental fact. Where there is bhoga, there would be also roga. Simply to say, I want only bhoga but no roga, that's not going to happen. But that is one type of thinking. But there is another type of people, rare people, that I want only God and I will use the world as an instrument so that I can slowly approach. This is the Hindu methodology. Life, therefore, has been divided into four stages. And these four stages have nothing to do with age. Even a 70 years old man, woman, can be in a childhood, so far as the understanding is concerned. So we come to the understanding that when as a person goes on growing up, not only physically, but intellectually, understanding-wise, he will understand that what I am seeking, I will not get. At first there will be hope, but later on he understands everything has a certain problems. Every enjoyment in this world has certain problems. What is the first problem? Same object may not give same happiness or even may give unhappiness. It depends upon the circumstances. So whenever we talk about squeezing, deriving happiness from an object, we forget it not only depends upon the object, even more than that, depends upon the subject. Am I healthy and have I self-control, etc. So first thing is, everything is temporary. Second is, no object gives the same amount of happiness. Every time it is a different experience. Third is, every enjoyment will bring in its fourth the equal payment. The payment for enjoyment is called suffering. Not money, not anything. What is the payment for good health? Ill health. Ill health has to be dealt with. But the moment we become careless, then again we fall into the trap, whether it is eating excessively, working excessively, sleeping excessively, we pay heavy price. As we go on evolving, we also learn our valuable lessons. Even after learning the lessons, it's not easy to change because of the old samskaras. They have become so deeply rooted, it is difficult to transcend them. So, what is spiritual sadhana? It is to struggle, to war with our old worldly samskaras, and not only worldly samskaras, but even spiritual samskaras. Perhaps some of you will be surprised. What is it you are trying to tell us? Even spiritual samskara can be a hindrance? Yes. That is what Gaudapadacharya says, rasasvadana. That is, we get happiness in doing japam and we get stuck there. We don't want to progress into dhyanam. Somehow we will develop after a long time, after learning a hard lesson. Then we enter into dhyana loka and we get tremendous happiness there. Again we get stuck and then again blows will come. Again we progress into savikalpa samadhi and it is even more joy giving, satisfaction giving, and we get again stuck. I think this is the last stage I am in. Nothing can be further from truth. Then we progress, we understand one day, this is also limited happiness. That is why we have seen in the Taittiriya Upanishad, Ananda Mimamsa, even Brahmaloka Ananda falls under only the Ananda of Samsara, Avidya, Anatma. That is why it falls under Anandamaya Kosha. So what is Brahmaloka Ananda? When a person learns to live only in Anandamaya Kosha without coming down to Vijnanamaya, much less Manomaya, Pranamaya, Annamaya, that is the highest. In the dualistic world, in the samsaric world, in the avidya world, but we get attached. We should not get attached. Having a few visions will not do. I have narrated a beautiful incident. There was a very great bhakta and he went to see Ramana Maharshi. And this bhakta was a devotee of Bhagavan Krishna. He had many real visions of Krishna and he wanted to share that joy with Ramana Maharshi. So he joyfully narrated. Ramana Maharshi, of course, he was not indifferent, but he looked at him at the end of the narrative and he said, whatever comes also will go away. So if you had a vision, the vision comes, the vision goes. But if you are yourself, then you will never come, you will never go. Whatever comes has to go. Whatever has a birth has to have a death. Even the birth of a vision must be accompanied by the death of a vision. So until that time, we have to be keep awake. Did I reach the goal or am I deluding myself that I reached the goal? That is what Sri Ramakrishna wants to give the answer. Here, a very important point has to be noted. A Brahma devotee may be asking an intellectual question. We do not know. Because later on life shows, even on 1st January 1886, which we celebrate today as Kalpataru Day, many devotees were touched by Sri Ramakrishna. They were lifted up. Many of them had varied types of visions according to their samskaras. But later on it is found, but they could not keep, and the great master ends with the episode of Vaikunthanath, because he was also touched by Sri Ramakrishna, but then he said, I could not bear it. I had to pray, O Lord, please take it away. I cannot stand to live in this highest plane. And it is only to give a glimpse. So what I am trying to tell you, the visions came by the grace of the Guru, visions disappeared, but nobody, most of them, they did not sit down and think, this has happened by the grace of our Guru, now I have to make it my own, which Swami Brahmananji replied to Vijay Krishna Goswami at Vrindavan, asked by Vijay Krishna Goswami, why do you need to practice such tremendous tapasya, kathora tapasya? Maharaj replied, Thakur had given everything to us, but we have to make it our own. And Vijay Krishna Goswami perhaps understood that statement. So every devotee that went to Sri Ramakrishna had some higher experience to prove to him there is definitely a higher life. So that is only to give a glimpse into it. So even if we are given such a privilege, we should not cut capers with joy. Oh, I have realized God. No, it is only to say there is a higher and higher realm. We have to make it our own. We have to live in that realm, not simply go and visit and come back like tourists. So Sri Ramakrishna is answering on October 28, 1882, that God is with form, God is without form, and God is beyond both form and formlessness. Now Sri Ramakrishna explains this concept. The forms and aspects of God disappear when one discriminates in accordance with the Vedanta philosophy. Now here, Sri Ramakrishna means by Vedanta philosophy, Jnana Marga, Advaita Marga. Most of us, we are advised by Sri Ramakrishna that this is not a path suitable for you. For Kali Yuga, Bhakti Yoga is the only way. So that is what he is going to tell also. Then the ultimate conclusion that one who is traveling in the path of Jnana Marga, he practices discrimination by saying, this is not real, this is not real, neti, neti. So through that discrimination, he comes, and after negating everything, what remains? That Brahman alone is real, and this world of names and forms illusory. Is this the final step? No. Sri Ramakrishna himself explains that by God's grace, usually what happens is, Sri Ramakrishna says, this is something we don't get in scriptures. After samadhi, most of the aspirants, they will give up the body after 21 days. But there are some people whose bodies and minds God keeps, so that the teaching of the scriptures, the life of the Jivanmukta is a living scripture. And every scripture, as we know, is the teachings of the spiritual experiences of a particular saint, whether it is Hinduism, Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, or Islam, any ism we can think of. So, forms of aspects of God disappear. Why do they disappear? Because every form is a limitation. Every name is a limitation. Every idea, every thought is a limitation. So a discriminating person, he understands. After negating everything, what remains? The negator remains. I remain. And I am Brahman. That is the only conclusion. But Sri Ramakrishna says, it is not to say, one should not think of the forms of God. It is possible for a man to see the forms of God or to think of him as a person. And how is it possible? He explains, only so long as a man is conscious that he is a man, he is a devotee, then it is possible, because the greatest spiritual truth is what one thinks of oneself, and his thinking of God also will be the same. If I am good, I think others are good. If I am evil, I think others are, everybody is evil. So if I am a mixer of both, everybody is a mixer of both. We cannot escape from this law. So as we go on purifying ourselves, our wrong negative notions slowly disappear, and we come to know I am none other than Brahman. And when this person looks at the world, he finds everything is nothing but manifestation of Brahman, just as a pot is nothing but manifestation of clay alone, but with a particular form, name, for a particular purpose. And then Sri Ramakrishna explains, why is it that Krishna or Kali are 3.5 cubits high? Not only that, why are they black? So there is a song, blue and black, both colors are used in Ramakrishna's words. And then there is a beautiful song also. Shama Maki Amar Kalore, Kalorupe Digambari. So he is my mother, black, blue. Sri Ramakrishna is explaining, do you know why images of Krishna and Kali are 3.5 cubits high? Because of distance. The longer the distance, the smaller they appear. That is why the sun, how vast it is, how many earths it can swallow, but it appears to be a small disk because of the distance. Because of distance. Again, on account of distance, the sun appears to be small. But if you go near it, you will find the sun so big that you won't be able to comprehend it. Why have the images of Krishna and Kali a dark blue color? That too is on account of distance, like the waters of a lake, which appears green, blue or black from a distance. You need not go to a lake. You just look up in daytime in the sky, you will see there are various colors. There will be blue color if it is crystal clear. Then there will be varieties, hues of clouds floating there. And these clouds assume different forms. You can imagine, it is a chariot, it is a car, it is an elephant, it is a horse, it is a human being, it is a woman, etc. So, why are these depicted as blue? Our rishis have not simply done it purposelessly. They understood. So, why is their color dark blue? That too is on account of distance, like the water of a lake. So go near, take the water in the palm of your hand, and you will find that it has no color. The sky also appears blue from a distance. Go near, and you will see that it has no color at all. Therefore, I say that in the light of Vedantic reasoning, that means in the light of Jnanamarga, Brahman has no attributes. The real nature of Brahman cannot be described. Why can't it be described? Because during our Upanishadic talks, we have discussed this point, which Shankaracharya explains so simply that to describe anything, there must be attributes. At least there must be 5 attributes. Jati, Dravya, Guna, Kriya, Sambandha. But Brahman doesn't fall under any attributes. An attribute limits an object. It separates an object. Every attribute is used in our day-to-day life to separate. You bring that blue book or that small book, the third book from the bottom, is our attributes. It is the third book, if you count from the bottom. It is a blue-colored book. It is to separate for the person who has to bring, or even for myself. So, any attribute, it limits. And Brahman is limitless. He is Ananta. Therefore, one should never attempt. But so long as your individuality is real, the world also is real. And equally real are the different forms of God and the feeling that God is a person. So long as I think I am a person, so long I think that other objects, other people, other beings, living or non-living, are real, I have to think God also is a person, is an individual. But through bhakti, slowly we can progress. So this is what Sri Ramakrishna says beautifully, and Swami Vivekananda gives a beautiful illustration. Supposing you are a photographer. You take a camera and travel towards the sun. So at first, your photograph will be very small, maybe a small speck. But as you approach nearer, the speck grows and grows and grows until your camera will not be able to capture anything in that brilliant light. It is pure light alone remains. That is what Sri Ramakrishna is telling. We don't need to quarrel whether a person is worshipping an image, because even when some people claim we are worshipping formless aspect of God, they're only thinking of that as a person, but in the form of qualities. He is compassionate, he is motherly, and he loves us. He is the creator, we are the creators, created creatures, etc., etc. So long as we think I am a person, God also remains a person only. And then Sri Ramakrishna is encouraging. Specifically he says, you are not Brahmagnanis, you are not treading the path of Jnana, don't commit that mistake. Sri Ramakrishna's grace is limitless. Why is he telling that? Because the Brahmos, some of them at least, must have been thinking, we are far superior to the superstitious Hindus who go on worshipping, bowing down, falling down at every stone image. Every Shivalinga, any stone can be a Shivalinga. But we are far superior. We only think of that infinite Brahman. Sri Ramakrishna is breaking that illusion that you are not Jnanis, your intellect is dull, you cannot think of God. You better assume the path of bhakti. And if we study the life of the Brahmo devotees, especially Keshav Chandra Sen, at the beginning, before he came into contact, he was only talking about Father God, because he was deeply influenced by the Christian concept of God. Christianity never accepted, even today, that God can also be worshipped as Mother. The best they could do is to think of Mother Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, as an interceder. So if somebody prays, Mother, I committed a mistake, please tell you, recommend me to your son to forgive my sins and take me to paradise. So our role is not the Divine Mother's role. Whereas in India, we are thoroughly soaked in this idea of the Mother. In even this Advaitins, they worship Mother Sharada, Saraswati. So she is the Divine Mother. She is the giver of knowledge. They can't escape. And whole morning will be going only in the temple. It is said of the great Paramacharya of Kanchi Kamakoti Petha, he used to enter into the temple of Kanchi Kamakshi at early morning 3 o'clock. And he will be sitting without movement, completely absorbed in the thought of the Divine Mother until late in the afternoon. Only after 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, slowly he will come back to external consciousness. So what is he doing? He must have realized that accepting through the grace, dhiyo yonaha prachodayat, without the grace of the Divine Mother, and Divine Mother is none other than God only, call her by the name Lakshmi, Saraswati, or Durga, Kali, etc. Here also, one more important point I want to remind you, that is many times there are people who worship Mother Saraswati and there are people who worship Mahalakshmi. I think 10th is special Mahalakshmi Puja is there this month. So what is the idea? The idea is Mahalakshmi is there only specially to bestow wealth. Nothing can be further from truth. If supposing Mother gives you the greatest wealth in this world, does it automatically make you a happy person? There is no chance. Because when you are sleeping, are you a happy person? Or are you a person who feels happiness? When you are worried about your wealth, property, courts, and fearful of what others can do to you, are you happy? No. She is the Divine Mother. Lakshmi is the Divine Mother. Sahasranama you read. Lalita Sahasranama you read. Saraswati Sahasranama you read. Durga Sahasranama. Kali Sahasranama. Every attribute belongs to every one of these names. Even in the Chandi we get, when Shumbha accused the Divine Mother that you are fighting with me with the help of so many other Shaktis, she says, Ekaivaham, I am alone. These are all myself only. There is no other Shakti besides me. And I only manifest as Shakti, as Bhakti, as Bhukti, as Yoga, as Roga, as Bhoga, as Nidra, as a job, as the caste, as intelligence, as a delusion, everything. I only manifest. Yadevi Sarva Bhuteshu, Lajja, Vritti, Vidya, Buddhi, Samsthita. These are all her manifestations. So therefore, Sri Ramakrishna is giving this highest Vedic teaching. You cannot describe Brahman. But how do you understand Brahman? As you shed your negative thoughts, limited thoughts, as you become less individual, more universal, your concept of God also becomes less individual and more universal. That's what Sri Ramakrishna is telling. So long as your individuality is real, the world also is real. And equally real are the different forms of God and the feeling that God is a person. Therefore, he is encouraging the Brahmos. Yours is the path of bhakti. That's very good. It is an easy path. Who can fully know the infinite God? And what need is there of knowing the infinite? Having attained this rare human birth, my supreme need is to develop love for the lotus feet of God. And what is love? Oneness with God. Even if a man says to a woman, I love you, he means, I think you are my own self. And then Sri Ramakrishna is giving. He gives the highest teaching. Most often he gives a beautiful illustration. Sometimes he bursts into a beautiful song. Sometimes he also makes a little bit of fun. But sometimes he gives a simile like Kalidasa. So he says, if a jug of water is enough to remove my thirst, why should I measure the quantity of the water in a lake? I become drunk and even half a bottle of wine. What is the use of my calculating the quantity of liquor in the tavern? What need is there of knowing the infinite? So he says, I can become free. I can become a mukta by surrendering myself to God. That is enough for me. And one form of God, one name of God, one mantra of God as given by my guru, that is sufficient. And here also Sri Ramakrishna says, elsewhere, not here, that don't practice spiritual disciplines on your own. You will have to follow the path of bhakti. For that, you must humbly approach a guru. And many of you have heard me explaining that so many times. Again, I am repeating, because the whole gospel is nothing but repetition of only few truths. So what should be my relation with the Guru? I don't care what my guru is, even if he is not spiritual. That is not the point. The point is, I decided to see, to learn how to look upon another person as God. Suppose you come across a saint, he is like a God, and you look upon him as God. You have no merit, because anybody can do the same thing, because the greatness is in that person. But if you can think of another person who is not at all great, as God, as the greatest, then he becomes like a mirror, slowly reveals the truth about yourself. That's what Sri Ramakrishna is telling. So yours is the path of bhakti, and if I follow my guru's instructions and never ever follow the path without the instruction of a guru, because I am choosing deliberately a person upon whom I can exercise my spiritual outlook. That is the secret of guru bhakti. Like Ekalavya. Ekalavya should have abandoned Dronacharya, because Dronacharya did not accept him for whatever reason. But he said, I have chosen you. I want to worship you as God, as Guru, as God. So I will look upon you as God. And God, through you, he will teach me. And he became greater archer than Dronacharya could ever teach because of that Guru Bhakti. So Sri Ramakrishna is telling, don't go on thinking whether God is infinite, God is having 1,000 qualities or 50,000 qualities. No, you just follow the direction. So somebody asked Swami Brahmanandaji, why do you want to follow a guru? He gave a very cogent reply. He said, human mind is very restless. One day it likes the name of Rama, another day of Krishna. Depends upon whose company you are keeping, which cinema you are watching, and which book you are reading. If you are reading Ramayana, Rama must be the greatest. Bhagavatam, Krishna must be the greatest. Vishnu Purana, Vishnu must be the greatest. Devi Purana, then Devi must be the greatest. The mind is oscillating. But the only way is that I will ask my guru, whatever path he says, throughout my life, I will try to stick to it. That is called Eka Bhakti. And that is why a guru is necessary. That is one of the reasons, not all reasons. And then Sri Ramakrishna says, how do we know we are progressing towards God? And then Sri Ramakrishna is describing, because even though he did not read books, why did he not read books? To prove to the world, reading books, bookish knowledge, is not a necessary condition for progress in spiritual life, let alone God realization. Therefore, he wanted to prove. Therefore, he did not endow his disciple, Adbhutananda, to learn anything. It is not that Latu Maharaj was lacking the intelligence, but Sri Ramakrishna's will is that let him remain as an example to the world. Illiteracy is no bar for spiritual progress. Swamiji brings out this beautifully by doing one's own karma, illustrating the teachings of Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Svakarmana tam abhyarchya siddhim indati manavaha. There was a housewife and she understood, serving my husband as God, looking upon him. And again, our inferior minds go on questioning. How can a wife look upon her husband if he is a drunkard, lecherous, cunning, inferior? How can? That is not the point. Just now, as I mentioned, like a guru, the scriptures prescribe me, once you are married, then whatever be the person, that is not the criteria. From your own eyes, he is none other than God. Even if God comes, then I will only serve the life of Bhakta Pundarika. That is how the Pandarinatha Kshetra has come. He became reformed. He was a very wicked person in his youth, but by God's grace and Purvajanma Samskara, he became extreme devotee of God. Lord Krishna, and one day he was serving his parents, and then Lord Krishna came, "Oh, how come that you are not visiting me nowadays?" Then what did this devotee do? He threw a brick, said, "Oh Lord, you will have to wait for your turn. Now I am serving my parents, and they are my God, not you. Once I finish service, they go to sleep, then I am free, then I will serve you." And the Lord was highly pleased. Svakarmana tam abhyarchya siddhim vindati manavaha. Following one's duty, this is called karma yoga. Just to do your own dharma, but turn it into karma yoga, not mere karma. And you will reach the same goal. Again and again, Bhagavan Krishna emphasizes this point in the beginning of the third chapter also, when Arjuna, he queried, which path is greater? He says, both these Jnana Yoga, he calls it Sankhya Yoga, and this Karma Yoga, both are valid paths to take you to the highest goal. So this is what Sri Ramakrishna has done throughout his life. Swami Vivekananda preached throughout his life in this connection. I am remembering, Swami Vivekananda became world famous and he returned to India and he was at Belur Mat. And his mother came one day and said, "Bile, when you were young, you fell sick. So I took a vow in Mother Kali's, Kolkata Mother Kali's temple, that you will strip yourself naked, excepting for a kaupena, and you will roll and do pradakshinam round her image in the temple. But I never had any opportunity to tell you this, but I wish it would be fulfilled." Immediately, he fulfilled mother's wish. One day, soon after that, he took some devotees, went to Mother Kali's temple, stripped himself completely naked, and so many people were astounded. The world famous Vivekananda is rolling like an ordinary superstitious devotee. There are so many people with faith, they do it. The Divine Lord sees everything. He will reward everybody. He only sees who is sincere, who is not sincere. So that is what Sri Ramakrishna wants to tell. How to know whether we are progressing in spiritual life? Important point is whether a person is following Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga is not important. Whether a person is worshipping Krishna or Jesus or Buddha, not important. What is important is, is your life transformed? Are you becoming less selfish? Are you acquiring identity with the larger whole? That is important. So, in the Yoga Vasishta, which is called the highest book on Jnana Yoga, that is a beautiful illustration of Ramayana in a spiritual way. As you know, there are a few books on Ramayana, especially three books are there. Valmiki Ramayana, Yoga Vasishta Ramayana, Adhyatma Ramayana, and later on Tulasidasa wrote his Ramacharita Manas, a beautiful unity of all the margas, especially Bhakti Marga. So, Sri Ramakrishna is describing because he must have heard about this from Tautapuri Maharaj or somebody. Sri Ramakrishna is telling the various states of the mind of a Brahmagnani. What is various states of mind? As a person is traveling towards the knowledge of Brahman, how his minds become more and more purified, less selfish, more universal, expanded. Finally, it identifies itself with the whole world. So these are described in the Vedas. Everything, the root cause of every piece of knowledge is only Veda. But Sri Ramakrishna, before proceeding, he says, the path of knowledge is extremely difficult. One cannot obtain jnana if one has the least trace of worldliness and the slightest attachment to woman and gold. This definitively, he says, this is not the path for the Kali Yuga. This is not the path for the Kali Yuga. So one cannot obtain jnana, right knowledge, if the mind is attached to worldliness. What is world? woman and gold, lust and sex and money, that is kama and kanchana. But they include other things, the desire for money, the desire for eating, the desire for name and fame, the desire for a higher position, the desire to be well known in the society. So many desires are endless. That is why he says this is not a suitable path for this Kali Yuga. And elsewhere he says, what is this Kali Yuga? Why is it not suitable? He says in the Kali Yuga, man's mind is fixed on his body. So he cannot think, I am not the body. So that is why he says that a man is totally identified with the lowest of the objects, that is the body. Deha buddhi will not go. And that is what Bhagavan Krishna also says in the Gita, especially in the 12th chapter. Klesho adhikatarastesha. It is very difficult for whom? Those who have got deha buddhi, dehatma buddhi. I am the body. Avyakta asakta chetasam. Avyakta hi gati hi dukham. Deha vadbhihi. Deha vat means I am the physical body. For such people, that highest concept of Satchidananda is impossible. Now Sri Ramakrishna comes, what are those seven planes, seven stages? According to Tantra also, there are seven chakras are there. These are roughly equal to that chakra. That is what Sri Ramakrishna is reconciling. The Vedas speak of seven planes where the mind dwells. When the mind is immersed in the worldliness, it dwells in the three lower planes. At the navel, the organ of generation, and the organ of evacuation. In that state, the mind loses all its higher visions. It broods only on woman and gold. And as I said, the other desires are there. Name and fame. I want money. I want great house, etc., etc. So such persons are called worldly people. But the spiritual life starts with the fourth plane. The fourth plane of the mind is at the heart. When the mind dwells there, one has the first glimpse of spiritual consciousness. One sees light all around. Such a man, perceiving the divine light, becomes speechless with wonder and says, ah, what is this? What is this? His mind doesn't go downward to the objects of the world. Why doesn't it go down? Because the higher is the plane where we dwell. The higher is the happiness. And it is a law that once a person attains to a higher happiness, he will not desire a lower happiness. Then Sri Ramakrishna proceeds. The fifth plane of the mind is at the throat. When the mind reaches this, the aspirant becomes free from all ignorance and illusion. He doesn't enjoy talking or hearing about anything but God. If people talk about worldly things, he leaves the place at once. Observe carefully. When you are in the company of people, and then people talk, what do they talk? Wherever their mind dwells, that is what they talk. A foodie talks only about food. A person with desire for money only talks about money. Whatever be the subject, these people will bring to their own pet desires. A person is after name and fame, he will talk about such persons. If a person is after position, his fan, he will be a fan of people with greater power, etc. So you can open your eyes and see why so many people are fawning. Oh, our president. Oh, he is the wisest man. That shameless open confession that I am the follower. Do they really believe that? No. Because they are expecting some drops will fall here and there. Some leavings fall out of that plate. And that could be more than what they imagine. Thereafter that. And how arrogant. How lying. But what I feel laughing at times after hearing this news. These very people, after as if a person has bought a small piece of cane sugar cane. And after chewing, he will throw it after squeezing all the rasam. like that these people are kicked out mercilessly and they don't wake up, again they will do it to the next person. That is called Mahamaya. So the fifth plane of the mind is at the throat. When the mind reaches this, the aspirant becomes free from ignorance and illusion. He doesn't enjoy talking or hearing about anything but God. If people talk about worldly things, he leaves the place at once. So when you feel, I cannot tolerate this talk, without any hesitation, if necessary, tell a white lie and get the hell out of there. Because I can guarantee you, you will get great relief. And Swami Adbhutanji says something else. If you cannot think of God, it is far better to sleep off than gossiping useless things. Because sleeping off will not produce more worldly samskaras, do not strengthen the worldly samskaras. Whereas talking, gossiping, especially finding the faults of other people, gossip also can be finding the virtues in the other person. That really helps. But how many people do it? Our egotism doesn't allow us to do that. And then Ramakrishna says, but even then, so what happens? The sixth plane is at the forehead. When the mind reaches it, the aspirant sees the form of God day and night, unbroken vision of the beauty of the form of God. But he passes a small remark, but even then, a little trace of ego remains. At the sight of that incomparable beauty of God's form, one becomes intoxicated and rushes forth to touch and embrace it. But one doesn't succeed. It is like the light inside a lantern. One feels as if one could touch the light, but one cannot, on account of the pane of glass. So this is the description about the sixth plane, sixth chakra, Agna chakra. And now we come to the seventh chakra. In the top of the head is the seventh plane. When the mind rises there, one goes into samadhi. Then the Brahmagnani directly perceives Brahman. Here perceives means, I am looking at a book, I am looking at you, I am speaking with you. No, he perceives, I am Brahman. We have to understand that. When the mind is in the sixth plane, I see Brahman. That is called Savikalpa Samadhi. But in the seventh plane, I am. Even to say I am Brahman, there the language Brahman doesn't exist. Mind doesn't exist. Words do not exist. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. But in that state, his body doesn't last many days. This is a saying which we do not usually get in any scripture. He remains unconscious of the outer world. If milk is poured into his mouth, it runs out. Dwelling on this plane of consciousness, he gives up his body in 21 days. That is the condition of the Brahmagnani. Then, having described these things, now he must have been meaning, now, oh, Brahmagnanis, that is modern Brahmagnanis, followers of Keshav Chandra Sen, etc., I don't think you are fit even to look at Jnana Marga. So, yours is the path of devotion. That is very good and easy path. Why is Ramakrishna telling? After all, your goal is to reach God. If there is an easy path, shortcut, where you can reach without much difficulty, why do you want to travel the difficult path? There is no need. And then Sri Ramakrishna wants to break that seriousness. So he's telling, once a man said to me, sir, can you teach me quickly the thing you call samadhi? Because Sri Ramakrishna was famous all over, that here is a man who could go into samadhi again and again. Everybody laughed. That breaks the condition where they can be brought again. Otherwise, some of them may lose the thread. Sri Ramakrishna continues, after a man has attained samadhi, all his actions drop away. All devotional activities, such as worship, japa and the like, as well as all worldly duties, cease to exist for such a person. Why? Because it is said karma, action means karma. Karma is meant to fulfill an what is called unfulfilled desire. But when a man attains God, all his desires are completely fulfilled. Brahmana saha samashnute iti. We have seen in the second chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahma vidha apnoti param, satyam jnanam anantam brahma. One who attains, what happens? Vipaschite iti brahmana saha samashnute. At once, he experiences Brahmananda by becoming one with Brahman. Brahmananda means all infinite ananda, which includes every one of the small anandas we experience sometimes. So, there is no need for action. Action is needed only when this is there. And Sri Ramakrishna also gives a beautiful example. We will talk about it in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadmetayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohoho. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.